Good afternoon, everyone. Afternoon. My name is Kevin Whitman. I'm the Oregon Area Director for the Remission Increase Foundation. And I've been asked to come today and talk about fundraising events and how we can leverage those events for maximum impact in our causes. So thanks for being here. Did everybody get a copy of the workbook? Because we're going to be using this as our tool to work through in the workshop today. So please make sure that you have a copy of that. I believe there are some in the center of your tables. All right, let's get started. As I just said, we are going to be talking today about leveraging our fundraising events, which is something that probably the majority of us are already doing in some capacity, but we want to get maximum impact out of those. So whether you're a seasoned pro who's been doing events for a very, very long time, or this is a concept that's pretty new to you, I trust that you're going to leave today feeling energized and more equipped to tackle your next event. Well, as we get started, a couple of fun questions. So my first question, I'm going to throw it out to everybody, is can you think of something from an event that you attended that really stuck with you, that really helped you connect to the cause, that was something that was done really well? Anybody?
You know, fundraising events.
Fundraising events. Something that really stuck with you. Yeah?
Like testimonies.
Testimonies.
Like, especially when you have the actual people there.
Okay.
Sharing how they've been impacted.
So stories.
Yeah.
Stories are big. What else? Okay, let's move to the second question. What are things that have happened at fundraising events that you didn't like? Or things that maybe you left saying, boy, why'd they do that? Or that didn't connect to the cause. I see more hands already. All right, go ahead.
Speaker went really long and it wasn't on mission with the ministry.
Way too long. Yep, we're going to talk about that today. Okay, what else? Yeah?
They punched the ask like really hard and made you feel like you weren't saved if you didn't pull out your
wallet. All right. Yeah. We're gonna talk about the ask today. So, good. What else? Yeah.
Confusion of the mission and the vision. Like, you're listening to them and you're like, okay, now what are you doing?
Yeah. Good one. Yeah. Okay. Anyone else?
General mission drift. You go and, like, different people will get on stage and they share, like, their heart with it. And,
right.
They're not in alignment with, like, one mission.
Yeah, so we want to make, yeah, we've seen it where not everyone is in alignment with the same mission of what's happening within the organization. So suffice it to say, all of us have been to events where there have been things that we haven't liked or we've walked away saying, boy, I don't want to repeat that. I don't want to do that. Well, the answer is we have a way that we can do them better. And so we're going to spend some time talking about that today. And after hearing those comments that we just made, some of us may be thinking, are events even worth it? Are they too much work? Are they old school? And my answer to that question is, I say absolutely events are worth it. And here's why. Because events are primarily about an invitation. They're about an invitation to have champions join you in the work that God has called you to do. Fundraising events are primarily about acquiring new champions in the cause. And that always starts with an invitation. Today, in our time together, we are briefly going to talk about three types of events. And next in your packet, there's a chart that I'm going to put up on the screen here that really talks about the three things that we're going to be looking at today. Down here in the bottom left, we have large-scale fundraising events. And then up at the top, we have micro events. And then over to the right side, we have a signature participation project. There are some unique things about each one of those types of strategies. But one of the things that we notice is that what connects all of them is right there in the middle of that graphic. All of them are acquisition focused. All of them are about bringing new people into the cause. So with large-scale events, we can see that it's about the organization. The organization story is prominent. In micro events, which we're going to talk about, it really is about the champion. And then in signature participation project, people actually get to do something in the cause. We're going to talk about all three of those things today. But at the beginning, I want to point out that all three of those strategies at their core have the same thing in common, and that is they're all about bringing new people into the cause. When we talk about any of these types of event strategies, There are several reasons why it is that we do fundraising events. Let's talk about that for a minute. We do fundraising events for four reasons. And you can see them up on the screen. The first reason is to raise money. It's always a good reason to do a fundraising event, to raise money. But if we're only doing events to raise money, we are missing out on three other really key things. The second thing you'll see up there is that we do events to bring new champions or new people into the cause. You'll hear me today use the word champion quite a bit. At Mission Increase, we don't use the word donor a lot. We use the word champion because those are people who get to be engaged with the cause and actually champion the cause in your behalf. So I love the fact that we get to use that word, and one of the reasons why we do events is to bring new champions into the cause. Another reason is that we want to use them as an opportunity to grow our existing champions in their connection to the cause. And then we have that fourth reason up there, which is we want to create a sense of community. What does it feel like to be part of who we are? And that happens in a beautiful way at fundraising events. Let's talk about each of these just a little bit more. So we do events to raise money. We know that more money can mean more people served, more stability. More money is always part of the story with good fundraising events. So we do them to raise money. But let's look at that second thing, bringing new champions into the cause. It is a great way for people who are new to your cause to connect in. You have a room hopefully full of people who are new to the cause. They're hearing the same thing. They're having the same experience at the same time. And we get to bring them into this group, into this cause that God's called all of us to. So I love the fact that we have a unique opportunity with events to bring in a whole group of new people. Most traditional fundraising dinners invite the same people to the event year after year after year. And I don't want to step on anybody's toes here today, but in reality, at that point in time, we're doing a donor appreciation event. We're not doing a fundraising event. We're doing donor appreciation. And in a true fundraising event, we need to have new people in the room. It's new people connecting to the cause, one of the reasons why we do it, which leads me to this third point of giving our existing champions opportunities to grow in the cause. And one of the best ways to accomplish that through events is we disciple them and encourage them to invite their spheres of influence into the cause. It's using our existing champions and the people that they know to bring in. So we're growing our existing champions and we're bringing new people into the cause at the same time. And quite frankly, it's common sense. Think of your own story. How much more likely would you be to attend an event if somebody that you knew invited you? Makes sense. And that's why we get to leverage the power of that personal invitation and grow our champions in that. So I love the fact that we get to do that. And then this part of creating a sense of community, that's something that people are so desiring to have. They want to belong to something bigger. And at an event, we have the opportunity to put on full display, this is who we are. This is what it means to be part of this cause. This is what it means to be part of what it is that God's doing through this movement. So I love the fact that we believe fundraising events done well will accomplish all four of these things really well. In fact, I would make a pretty bold statement and say that this is probably the best way and most comprehensive opportunity for you to accomplish all four of these things at the same time. To raise more money, get new champions, grow your existing ones, and create that sense of community. Let's talk a little bit now about how it is that we would go about doing that. So we want to first talk about large-scale events, banquets, galas, things like that. Let's start our focus there today. And quite frankly, the work that you do prior to your event is going to set the stage as to how successful your event will be. I'm talking about doing planning for your event as much as 9 to 12 months in advance of your event. Okay, now, don't check out on me now, right? I'm not saying you can't do an event on a shorter timeline. We've seen ministries do a lot of stuff on a shorter timeline. But to plan it really, really well, we need to be thinking far in advance. So it doesn't mean we can't do stuff on a shorter time period, but really, if we have that full amount of time, we can plan it really, really well. So rather than look at it and say, oh my goodness, I don't have 9 to 12 months, I'm not going to do it. The right question would be, what can I do within the time frame that I have to accomplish this well? Okay? So don't hear me say, don't do it if you don't have 9 to 12 months. I want you to do large-scale events, but there are things that we can do even if we have a shorter amount of time. So the very first step in the work that we're going to do in setting up our event, is determining why. Why are we doing it? What's the focus? Why are we doing it? And really, quite frankly, who is it that we want to have there? We want to do it because we want to build ministry momentum. And when we're talking about why we want to do our event and figuring that out, there are two main questions that I want you to look at. I want you to look at, what do we want the people who are attending to know? And then following that, what do we want them to do? What do we want them to know? What do we want them to do? Now, my advice on this, keep it simple. Keep it simple. One of the biggest challenges I've seen as ministries plan events and execute events is they try to tell everything of the organization at their event. It's too much. And that was actually one of the things that came out in that question that I asked at the beginning. They're just this parade of speakers and everybody coming up, and people, quite frankly, they get too much information at the event. So my advice with what we want people to know and what we want them to do is keep it simple. As I've been coaching a lot of ministries through planning events, which quite frankly I'm seeing unprecedented levels of creativity when it comes to events. We're going to talk about that in a minute. But I've started having them start with this question and ask them, what are the three things that when people leave your event that you want them to know? What are the three things? Now, let me give you what the answer isn't. The answer isn't who we are, how they can pray, how they can give, right? We got to get down. We got to get specific. You have the opportunity now maybe to clarify misconceptions, maybe to answer the most frequent questions that you get asked, maybe to answer some of those things that people may not know about your cause that would really make a difference in their connection. So think of what some of those things could be, those unique things could be. What do you want them to know? What's going to make a difference to them as they now are connecting with the cause? And then you can follow up with, what action step are we going to ask them to take as they've learned this new information? At an event, a giving step is always appropriate, which we're going to talk about. But there may be a secondary step as well that we would ask them to take. So be thinking about, first of all, what do we want them to know? And then what do we want them to do? So after we've looked at the why, after we're figuring out this is why it is that we're doing what we're doing, the next step is to determine who. And when I mean determine who, I'm meaning who's going to help with this. I had somebody ask me before this session started today, basically, what's the magic answer here to get all of this money at these events? And I said, well, there is no magic bullet. But if you really want a nugget of information here that's going to make a huge difference, it's the people who are helping you with this. You can't do this alone. And really, quite frankly, I would say that the simple rule of this is the success of your fundraising event starts and ends with your volunteers. Who's helping you with this? So when we think about that, who? And there are several roles that you can think of when we're looking at an event. Is there somebody who could be the overall coordinator? Is there somebody who could work at bringing in table sponsorships? What about those who are going to host? Here's a big one. What about the prayer coordinator for the event? Right? So there are these positions, there are these people that we need in place to help us, because if as a staff you're trying to add this one more thing to your calendar and you don't have a team around you, it's going to be pretty challenging. So I do believe that God brings people to be able to help us with this. So we need to look at who it is that we could bring. Next in your packet of materials, I've actually given us a tool that we're going to work on for a second today here in the event. And that is just to think, who is it that we could possibly invite to be part of this team? So in this exploration that I've given to you, you can see I've got this in two parts. The first one is, who could you potentially invite to be an event coordinator, or a table coordinator, or a prayer team coordinator, or another position that you might have? And then the second part of that question is, who are five people that you could think of that might be able to host or sponsor a table at your event? These are not your regular go-to people, but different people. Now, here's another question that I want to throw out at you as you're thinking about who you might consider. For whom would this be a growth step for them in the gospel? We're looking for people that are ready to take a growth step. They're ready to engage deeper. So rather than look at it of who do we know who could afford it, or who do we know who has the time, if we're looking at this saying, who would this be a good growth step for, that may change who it is that we put down on the paper. So I want to give you just a couple minutes. Think through. God may have already revealed someone to you as we've been talking about this today, but write their name down. Because if you're anything like me, if you don't write it down when you think of it, it might not come back at a later time. So go ahead and write it down. I'm going to take a couple of minutes and we'll come back. Going to give you just another probably half minute on this. And there are several explorations we're going to be doing during the session today. And realistically, I'm not going to give you enough time to be able to finish them. We simply just don't have enough time in the workshop today. But it will give you a taste of how to do it, and you can take it and work on it later and with your team. So we've talked about why. We've talked about who. And then as we're looking at planning our event, the next things that we want to look at are the what and the how. Once we know why, once we know who, then we can talk about the what and the how. I don't want you to decide what type of event to do because one thing might be cheaper or the location might be easier. I want you to look at designing an event that works for your champions. What works for them? And even though it may be easier to do a spaghetti dinner in the basement of a church, want my professional advice on this from the work that we've done with a lot of ministries? Spaghetti dinner in the basement of a church events yields spaghetti dinner in the basement of a church donations. Right? Do something that fits your champions. Don't do something because it's easier or it's cheaper, but do something that fits your champions. And quite frankly, this is an opportunity to be incredibly creative. As I said, I'm seeing unprecedented levels of creativity among ministries who are doing large-scale events. One of my favorites is a ministry that was in Kansas City, and the ministry is for prison inmates, and they actually did an event where they hosted it inside the prison. I want to talk about an event that made sense for them and people who were connecting to that cause, and the inmates were the ones who served the meal. And they actually paid for the meal out of the wages that they get from working in the prison. So I love the fact that was an opportunity for them to be incredibly creative. And then the things that people are doing at events. Like I know of another ministry that did a poverty simulation and another ministry that works in education. They were doing sample questions from a GED test. And there are so many things that people are doing to be creative. And I want this to be fun. Quite frankly, do you want to go to an event where you're not going to have fun? We don't. We want to go to an event and we want to have fun and we want to connect to a cause. So let's take the opportunity to be really, really creative because we want to do those things where people are going to get it, right? They're going to get it. And one activity another ministry did that actually helps women of compromised backgrounds re-enter the workforce, one of the things that they do is they help women fill out job applications. Well, the challenge if you've got a compromised background is you have limited information to put on a job application. And so they passed out these job applications, and then they had, I think, five different scenarios, and everybody at the table had three of them. And they had those three things, and with those challenges, they had to fill out a job application. No references, no past employment, all of these things. And all around the room, people were saying, I can't put down anything on the paper. Now, what happened? They got it. Right? They got it. They were able to really pick up part of what that cause does because they experienced part of it. Okay? So the next thing that I would like for you to do, and we're going to do it here in the workshop today, is I've given you a worksheet, this next exploration, where I want you to think about now what is something creative that you could do that would be uniquely you that would connect people in a deeper way to your cause. So I've given two parts on this worksheet. The first thing is there something clever or unique you've seen done before? And then the second piece is, what are some things that you might be able to do? How could you make table conversation part of the program? How could we make the event really come alive and make it like us? So go ahead and just take a couple minutes and work on that, and then we'll come back together. Okay, again, I recognize I'm not giving you a great deal of time to complete the worksheet, but you get the idea of what we're talking about. What can we do to really make these events come alive for the people who are there and, quite frankly, help them feel that community piece that we believe is so important? What does it feel like to be part of who we are? So we've already talked about the why, we talked about who, we've talked about what and how, and now next we want to talk about when and where. Okay, did you notice? Yeah.
Might be a silly question. Are we supposed to be in with this process?
Mm-hmm.
The events, so the how, the things we put together that are directly related with the core of what we're trying to do as a ministry?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you want to help people understand this is what we do. This is the people that we're serving. This is what it is that we're about. We want to give them a taste of what it feels like to be part of us. And that's a really great question. And when we're looking at designing things like that that are really unique experiences, one of the best tools that I could give you for that is to put yourself in the shoes of either the person giving the ministry or the person receiving the ministry. What does it feel like? What does it feel like to either be the one doing the work or the one receiving the ministry? And as we look through those two things, sometimes that helps us be able to really look at some creative ways that we can tell our story. Okay?
So the example you used about folks coming in and filling out job applications,
mm-hmm.
That's the focus of that particular organization. They help people.
They help women of compromised backgrounds re-enter the workforce. And one of the things that they wanted people to understand is that one of the key elements of that is in order to get a job, you have to fill out a job application. And for them, that is a huge obstacle. And one of the reasons why they do what they do is they give women the job experience and those types of things to be able to fill out that application to move to the next step. So they determined that for them, that was one of those key things they wanted people to know. And it really made the whole ministry come alive because people understood even better after that, okay, now I'm getting what it is that you do. And if we're trying to help these women get work, that's a big obstacle that we have to help them overcome. Okay? Great questions. All right, so now we're going to talk about when and where. And I want you to notice where this comes in the questions that we've asked. When and where is at the end of the questions in planning, not at the beginning. And the reason why I want to point this out is because a lot of us get this order wrong. We think, I have to do an event in April, and it's going to be at this hotel in this ballroom. And then we back up from there. And we realize, wait a minute, what I want people to do and experience, I can't do in a ballroom, or the restrictions there will not allow us to do it, or that date's not going to work, or people aren't available, right? We have to look instead at what type of event do we want to do? What are we wanting to accomplish? What do we want this to look and feel like? Then we look at where we can have it. Then we look at when would be the right time to do it. So we purposefully put this at the end of that order for that reason, because we want to make those other determinations first and then look at when and where can we do that. So now we've talked about the event, we've talked about doing some planning up to it, we've talked about being creative, and I know that in coaching with Alan as the Mission Increase Area Director for the Next Generation Alliance, he'll be able to really help you through a lot of this stuff. But I want to point out that when we're looking at these large-scale events, that everything that we do there points to the invitation of what we want people to do. Remember, we said we have to answer that question, what do we want them to know, what do we want them to do? The whole thing leads up to this invitation piece. We want to build toward that invitation to take that step. And again, a giving step is always appropriate. There may be a secondary step, but it all builds toward that. And when we get to this point in the program, there are a lot of things that I've seen that would be those things I would caution you not to do. Okay? The first one on that, the first mistake that I see people make is they get to this invitation piece, or what we refer to as the ask, and they don't actually ask. You ever been there?
Yep.
They're kinda hinting at it a little bit. And we've all been there, and quite frankly, I'm sick of hearing those, right? But we've heard them. Maybe we've even made some of them. But to say things like, well, if God at ever in some point might, either tonight or in the future, could potentially in any way maybe lay something on your heart that you could connect in. Okay, you're laughing, you've heard it, right? Don't do that. You have a responsibility to ask boldly, not like people aren't saved, right? Because the whole invitation is leading up to, this whole program is leading up to this invitation of a powerful moment. And quite frankly, we're not twisting people's arm to give and they're not saved if they don't give. We're saying, God's doing an amazing thing. Do you want in? That's the invitation piece. And everything we've done leads to that point. So make sure that when you ask, you actually ask. The other thing I've seen is that we can get everything right coming up to this point, and we actually make a really good ask, and then when we go to conclude the program, we suck all the air out of the room. Because at that point in time, we have all the board members stand, and we thank all the volunteers, and we have people go get their auction items. And oh, by the way, if you have the sticker under your chair, you get to take the centerpiece home, right? All that stuff, it just sucks the energy out of the room. What we want to do at that point is we want to send people out on a high note, not say, thanks the volunteers. We want to thank the volunteers, but do that at the beginning of the event. Don't do it at the end, right? That sucks the energy out. But we have the opportunity at this point in time to say, tonight in this ballroom in Portland, Oregon, we are a room full of power. And quite frankly, with what happened here tonight in this gathered assembly, we have affected change halfway around the world. Go tonight knowing you are a change agent in Jesus' name. God bless you. See the difference? You see the difference that that makes? Where you have just now empowered people to go out feeling like they've made a kingdom difference. Not that we applauded to thank the volunteers who served our meal. Not that that's not important. It's just not the time. Okay? So send people out on a high note knowing that they're doing something incredible in the kingdom. Couple of other things that we want to avoid. Going too long, that's a big one. And then too many speakers up there all saying the same thing. We don't all need to repeat all of this stuff. A really well-designed program that's very succinct and to the point accomplishes way more than going an hour and a half to 2 hours and saying the same thing four times. Okay? So make certain that we're keeping it concise and that we are actually coaching our speakers. And quite frankly, this is one of the points that I want to make really clearly. When it comes to your event, you are the director. You're the director. So make sure that you are the one who is making sure that things are going the way it is that you want them to. You're the one who is managing the storyline. And that's why, quite frankly, when I did events, I required scripts from every single person who spoke at the event. And I don't know if you've been in this place before where you may have asked somebody for that and they say, you know what, I'm just the type of person, I kind of flow with the Holy Spirit here, and so I'm just going to get up there and wing it. Don't use them. Don't use them. God's in the planning process and he's in the execution process, right? You're the director. So make certain that you know what it is that's going to be said at your event, because everything leads toward that invitation. When I've previously taught this topic, I've actually made this statement to the ministry leaders that I coach on a regular basis. You ready? If you're not going to coach your speakers, don't invite me to your event, because I'm not coming. I don't want to witness your train wreck. Coach your speakers. That's how much I believe in this particular point. Let me give you a quick story. I was working with a ministry really right when I first came to my role here at Mission Increase, and they had their event planned, and did some things I would not have recommended that they do. They actually hired a big gun to come in and do the big keynote, and it bombed. It just bombed. There's no other word for it. There's no other nice way to say it. It bombed. And it got off focus and wasn't related to cause, and it just was not a good event. So we debriefed it afterward. We said, okay, what are we going to do differently next time to connect this to cause? And so we were having these conversations. And then the next meeting that I was at with them, they said, we've got it. We've got this really great idea for a next event. We are bringing in an improv comedy troupe. And in my calmest voice possible, I looked straight across at him and said, are you insane? What are you thinking? Oh, no, it'll be a great idea. I said, wait a minute, let me get this straight. Not only do you not know what they're going to say, they don't know what they're going to say. You're in charge of this. Why are you abdicating responsibility at this point? Fortunately, they didn't bring in the improv comedy troupe. So I'm saying to you today, don't make that mistake. Don't even consider bringing in an improv comedy troupe, because you're in charge. You are the director. So once we've got to the event, we've done it, we've done the ask, we've ended well, guess what? The event isn't over. You think that it is, but it's not. Because at this stage is where now you get to start planning for the next one. And quite frankly, you get to close the loop with those people who were at this one. So here's some things that we want to do. We want to acknowledge what people actually did at the event. And let me give you a few quick things that I think are good starting points with that. Number one is every first-time giver gets a phone call. If you can, I'd call every giver, but start with those who gave for the first time. Everyone gets a phone call. Here's why. This is your one opportunity to ask what connected them to the cause. It's not just a thank you call, it's a discovery call. Again, this is something that Alan can work with you in coaching. Thank all your volunteers, your table sponsors, people like that, but make sure that you're contacting those givers and finding out what it is that connected them to the cause. And then it's important to report back what it is that happened as a result of the event. So we want to acknowledge the step that they did, we want to invite them to a further step in the cause, and then we want to report back what happened at the event. And then one of the things that we want to do is we want to make sure that we're evaluating our event. And here's my recommendation to you. Sit down with your team, evaluate it, and take notes. Because next year, you're going to think you're going to remember these things, but write them down. Put them in the file for next year so that you make sure you've got those notes. So we want to make sure that we're acknowledging, we're inviting, we're reporting, we're evaluating what happened, and then we can't miss this last piece. We get to celebrate. Look what God did. I just had a conversation with a ministry leader that their event was this last weekend. God showed up, folks. God showed up in a miraculous way, and they are rejoicing with what it is that happened. Not just the dollars that were raised, but the new people who came into a cause, into the cause as a result of it. So again, I can tell you, seeing things happen through large-scale events in unprecedented ways. So make sure that at the end that we're celebrating and we're thanking God for what it is that He did. I said at the beginning that we're going to be talking about three types of events. And so now I want to switch gears a little bit. We talked about large-scale events, and now I want to move on to what we call micro events. A micro event is a smaller event, usually less than 30 people. And here's a key difference. It's where a champion gathers their friends, their neighbors, their colleagues, their family together to tell their story of connection to the cause. So it's not a large-scale event done in miniature. It's a completely different animal, and we want to talk about that today. It's completely different in scale and in focus. And micro events accomplish things that no other acquisition strategy can do. It really is the only one with a champion-led focus. It features the champion's story of connection to the cause, and it's designed around an experience in the cause. We want to give people an experience of what does it feel like to be part of this particular cause. And quite frankly, this is one of those focuses that is a lot more approachable for your younger givers that may not come to a large-scale event, but this gives them an amazing opportunity to connect their friends. Micro events can accomplish things that no other strategy can do. Because when you take a champion who has a powerful story to tell, and you add their willingness to share it and gather with their friends, you have created a moment of invitation. You've created that moment. And that means that the best micro events are centered around your champion's story. That is one key difference between micro events and large-scale events. Micro events are centered around the champion's story. Large-scale events are usually centered around the organization's story. Micro events are about your champion's story. And micro events are not us as leaders arm-twisting our wealthy donors so that we can come in and we can host an event in their house with their friends. I'm not saying they shouldn't host a micro event, but the micro event needs to be centered around their story of connection to the cause. That's what makes a micro event unique, is it's centered around your champion's story. So we look at those people for whom this would be their right next step. And one of the pushbacks that I've heard regarding micro events is, well, do we have champions who have stories to tell? And I believe that you do. And quite frankly, start with yourself. Do you have a story of connection to your cause? Do you have a story of how it is that God has changed your heart and He's morphed your heart in connection to that cause? Think of yourself and then start asking similar questions to the champions in your cause, and you will uncover the stories that they have of connection to the cause. We're going to talk a little bit about coaching them through that. But when we talk about designing an event centered around a champion story, let me tell you one of my very, very favorite examples of a micro event. It's an organization called Encompass, which deals with educating children in Haiti, and they deal a lot with the poverty issue there. And this one woman who went on a missions trip with them was incredibly impacted, and one of the things that really struck her was how people in Haiti do laundry. Because here in the States, we can go do a load of laundry, right? 10 o'clock at night, we can go throw a load in, we can throw it in the dryer overnight, in the morning we go and we've got dry clothes, right? Not so in Haiti. In Haiti, one river, one bar of soap, one bucket, the entire village, that's how they do laundry. And she was so impacted by that and how different that experience was for her that what she did is she invited her friends over to her house on a Saturday afternoon and invited them to bring dirty socks and t-shirts. And in her backyard, with one garden hose, one bucket, and one bar of soap. They did laundry. And she was able to tell her story of what happened to her in Haiti, how God had transformed her heart. So I love that example because that's centering a micro event around a champion's story. This is what impacted her. And she was able to tell her story, quite frankly, way better than if the executive director of Encompass had showed up to that event. That's why I love a micro event strategy. She was able to tell her story. And that means micro events are not one size fits all. Micro events are designed around your champion's story. It needs to be customized to them. And quite frankly, a micro event that's done by a college student is going to look really different than a micro event done by a bank president. Right? Spheres of influence are different. Facilities are different, right? All of those things are different. That's why we don't want to say, here's the one thing, and you do it here, and you do it here, because it's got to be designed around the host's story. It needs to make sense for those people that they are going to invite. When we talk about micro events, now I want to give you a very simple acrostic that's going to help you understand some key elements of micro events. And the acrostic is NICE. Micro events are NICE. That's your acrostic. Can we all remember that? They're NICE. And let me tell you what I mean by that. First of all, we believe that micro events are narrowly focused. Talk about that in a second. We also believe that they're integrated as part of your overall strategy and they're done intentionally. That's the I. We believe that a micro event has a call to action. And then we believe that there is an experience component that makes micro events really unique. Let's talk about all four of these things a little bit more. When we talk about micro events that are narrowly focused, what we want to emphasize here is that we need to avoid telling the entire story of the organization, and we need to focus on one piece. One piece that will connect people to the bigger story, but we want to tell that one piece so that we would rather have them ask the question, what's next or in what else, rather than have them feel overwhelmed with the entire piece. So narrowly focused. And when we talk about this, I realize that this can be counterintuitive for a lot of us because we're so used to thinking big picture. We're so used to communicating big picture, and I want us to do that, and I applaud our thinking on that. When it comes to micro events, we actually need to start thinking small. What's a small thing that we can do? What's an entry point into this that we could do? Let me walk you through some thinking about that. So in this next exploration that's in your packet, why don't you turn there now? And let me just walk you through kind of what it is that we're thinking about when we're talking about this, okay? So first question that we have on here is, what's your cause? So let's say that you're focused on making change in Rwanda, right? That's the broad cause of what it is that you do. And one of the things that Alan said yesterday when we were introducing the whole concept of mission increase is your organization is not your cause, right? The cause is way bigger than the organization that you're connected with. So what's the cause? And then the second thing that we want to look at is, what is the big change that you are working to achieve? What do we want to do? So if your cause is Rwanda, the big change that we're working to do is that we are helping people to be able to have employment there. And then we're going to look at that. What's one way that we do that? Well, we do job skills training for women. And one of the things that we do in job skills training for women is we have a sewing class. Okay? See where we're going here? Big cause, Rwanda. What's the change? We're employing women. How do you do that? We have sewing classes. See the progression down? We're getting smaller, right? So then the next question is, what does it take to do that? Well, I'm saying it takes instructors, it takes supplies, it takes fabric, it takes scissors, it takes all of these things to be able to do that. Okay, so now I've got that. Next question, what obstacles prevent us from doing that? Well, I happen to know that in these classes where these women are learning this, there's about 30 women who are there, and they've got one pair of scissors for the whole class to pass around, And quite frankly, it's taking a whole lot of time, where if we had more scissors, more supplies, we could actually teach at a much faster rate. And that gets me thinking, scissors. You mean if we had a micro event where everybody came that night and they brought a pair of scissors? And maybe collectively at the end of that, we decided that we were going to sponsor one job skills program for women. That's a bite-sized entry point. See what I'm saying there? That's a small piece that's connecting us to the broader cause of broad change in Rwanda. Like one small piece, but it's connected to the cause in a pretty profound way. That's what we're talking about. So right now, would you take just a minute, and as I've been talking about this, there may be some things that have come to your mind. Take a minute and jot some things down. So if there's something that you've thought of already, well, we could do something around that. Or I hadn't thought of it this way. Maybe this is something that would have some merit. Go ahead and jot it down. Just take a minute and do that, and then we'll come right back. Again, with these explorations, these are things that you can take and you can finish them after the workshop. You can do them as part of your team. But we want to actually give you the opportunity in these sessions to put down some practical things that may really trigger some thoughts afterward. We've talked about the N in the acrostic being narrowly focused. How can we do one expression of the cause? And the next letter in our acrostic is I. And when we talk about that, we're really talking about integrating this strategy. And a couple of other words that we want to talk about there is intentional. We want to make micro events intentional. That it's not just an afterthought, but we realize that micro events are actually a really great lead into larger scale events. For those who are, an event is on the horizon, but we need to actually work at that a little bit more. We need to find potential hosts and sponsors. Micro events are a great way to populate the people who could potentially be at your event and be table hosts and sponsors. They're an also great way to lead out of a larger scale event. You may have people who've come to your event and they've been like, I love it. I've got to get people connected to this. When's the next event? You go 364 days because we do this once a year, right? Micro events gives you the strategy to be able to do this in an ongoing way. So make sure that it's intentional. It's part of your overall strategy. It's incorporated in, and that's really what it is that we mean when we talk about micro events being integrated. They're intentional. Let's talk about the C in the acrostic, which is a call to action. We want to provide the opportunity for people to do something in the cause. What's the call to action? And that can be based on your champion's story. It can be an individual call to action. It could be a community-based call to action. So again, when we talked about the example that I gave you of the lady from Haiti, she's a child sponsor. She was able to go to Haiti and be able to see where it is that her child lived, and she was very impacted by these conditions. But the call to action at that particular micro event is she was asking her friends to take the step that she had taken, which was to sponsor a child. So that was the call to action at that particular micro event. But an individual call could be to bring the pair of scissors, or to buy a pair of cleats, or to do basketballs, right? But then we could also have a community-based call to action. Together, we are going to sponsor a sewing class for women, or we are going to resource a pastor with these things in his village. So there's all kinds of things that you could do with a call to action. So the next thing in your packet of materials is a worksheet for that. And again, want to give just a quick minute on this, but as you've been thinking through this, have some things already come to you. What could be things that at a micro event could potentially be a call to action? What could we invite people to do? From filling baby bottles, or again, sponsoring a child, being part of a prayer team at an evangelist crusade, what are some things that we could actually have people do? If things have come to you, I would encourage you, take just a minute and write those things down before we move on. We don't want to lose those things and lose that momentum. Right, let's move on now to the E in our acrostic, which stands for experience. We want to create an inspirational experience. Let me give you the main reason why. People remember 20% of what they hear. They remember 80% of what they experience. Do we want them to remember? Give them an experience. You really want to up that? People remember 90% of what they teach someone else. So just think through those things. That's why we believe an experience is so vital, is because people remember it. It stays with them. It connects with them. So we want to design those types of experiences that people can have. Again, we've already given you some examples on that today. But in your particular cause, what are some things that people could do? I already used the example. Put yourself in the shoes of somebody either giving the ministry or the person receiving the ministry. And one of the things that I saw was incredibly effective at a micro event that someone did, where it was really, again, putting themselves in the shoes of the person giving the ministry, is they actually had people at the event speak through an interpreter. Now, a lot of people who have not traveled overseas have ever had that experience, and it's a totally different experience to actually have to deliver something through an interpreter. And they did that at their micro event. They gave everybody the opportunity to do that and have them experience that. Now that's something that when they left, they have a completely new understanding of what it's like to go into a cross-cultural situation and have to share a story and have that come across through an interpreter. They have a whole new understanding and appreciation for that. It's a great experience for them. So again, how can we be creative? But it's not about somebody coming and listening to somebody tell their story. It's having an experience in that story. What can we give them? What can we have them do that they're going to take away? How can they feel it? How can they taste it? How can they experience it? And quite frankly, one of the guiding principles that we've used for this in designing really great experiences for micro events is, if you can't experience the cause in the living room, then by all means, get out of your living room. Go where you have to go. Do what you have to do to have people experience what this is like. An inspiring thing is that people are going to talk about it after the experience that they've had. And if the cause can't be heard or smelled or tasted or felt or done in the confines of a living room, then go where it can be done. You're not limited to the four walls of your living room to be able to do a micro event. Design the experience there. When we talk about designing a strategy for micro events, there's four things that I want you to remember, and that's this. We need to identify hosts, we need to coach them, nail down the details, and then debrief afterward. Let me talk about those briefly. These four things we believe are really key, and one of the things that I get all the time is, I can't find people to host. I can't find people to host. I apologized earlier if I was going to step on people's toes. I should probably apologize again, because this is another one of those times when it could happen. But I'm going to push back on that, because I've seen in coaching ministries, the two main reasons why we can't find hosts is either we're not looking or we've made it too hard for the host. Those are the two things that keep people from doing this. So what are we doing to make this approachable for them? And quite frankly, when we do our job next of coaching the host, that really bridges that gap. And when we think of who are the right people to host at a micro event, who's got a story? Who's got a story of connection to the cause? Who's been on trips? Who's done things in the cause already that has a story? They are great micro event hosts. The other question, I had asked it earlier with regard to large-scale events and people who could be involved in that team, for whom would this be their next growth opportunity? You've got somebody who's saying, I love what it is that's going on, what can I do next? Got a great opportunity. So for whom would this be their next growth opportunity? So I love the fact that that changes the whole equation when we're looking at potential people to be able to host. So identify the hosts, and then it's your job to coach the host. Listen to their story. quite frankly, draw the story out of them. They may not even realize that they have a story, but when you start asking them questions, it all starts coming out. And sometimes it's our job to say, hey, did you hear what it is that you just said? That's powerful. Oh, that's amazing. Let's talk about that. We can design something around that. It's our job to coach them and to draw those things out of them, and quite frankly, to design that experience and call to action out of their story. So we want to identify the host, we want to coach them, and then we want to nail down the details. Surprise, not everybody is an event planner. So when it comes to doing things like this, some people could rightly think, oh my goodness, I wouldn't want to miss anything. There's lots of things to consider. What's the program going to be, and when's it, and where is it going to be? Who are we inviting? Lots of questions. Don't panic on this, because when we're done here, I've got a tool that I'm going to resource you with, which will help answer a lot of these questions. But we want to help the host of the micro event be able to figure these things out, not just throw them to the wolves, but how can we help them design an experience and think of all of these things that are going to be really helpful to them? And then the last thing is, we want to create space to debrief the experience afterward. When people have gone through something like this and they've experienced something new in the cause, we need to understand that oftentimes God's really doing something in them. And God may be doing something very significant in them. And again, we want to take the opportunity at that point in time to have that conversation with them. Say, what happened? What'd you learn? What'd God do? What did He reveal? How together can we now connect with the people who came to this micro event, but take the opportunity to debrief the experience? And again, people remember 80% of what they experienced. So how is this becoming an experience for your host as well? So we believe strongly in a micro event strategy as part of an overall strategy. We've talked about large scale events. We've talked about micro events. And now, very quickly, I want to talk about that third component of an acquisition strategy, which is what we call a signature participation project. Now, we believe that this is the primary activity that your ministry uses to engage new champions in the cause. Okay? Here's why I choose to talk about this now. Talk about large-scale events, organization-focused. We've talked about micro-events, which revolve around your champion story. And in coaching a lot of ministries through this, what I've discovered is that oftentimes a signature participation project rises to the top out of a micro event strategy, where we've realized this is something that's really connecting with people. This is something that's really key. This is something people are getting a lot out of. And so that's why I like talking about it in conjunction with micro events, because there are some things that could be very similar in those things. But let's talk really briefly about what that could be. And again, Alan's going to be available to do some coaching with you on this. You may have something that you believe is a primary entry point, that number one thing that champions do to take that baby step in your cause. Quick question. Anybody ever filled a Christmas shoebox at Christmas time? You done that? You have participated in the signature participation project for Samaritan's Purse. Number one thing they do. You want to connect with Samaritan's Purse, first thing you do is fill a shoebox. Right? That's what we're talking about. Anybody ever grabbed one of those tags off Project Angel Tree at Christmas time, purchased the gift? Okay. You have participated in the signature participation project for Prison Fellowship. Number one way people connect. That's what we're talking about. What's unique to you? And when we talk about signature, we're talking about that primary entry point. And the reason why we believe this is so important is because your champion's story goes way farther for them to say, I went down to the shelter this weekend and I helped guys prepare for job interviews. That goes a whole lot farther than them saying, I give to the mission because I think they do really good work. See the difference? And we want people to say, I've got a story, they've got an experience, and that's why this is so important and why I want to talk about it at this point. So when we talk about signature participation project, and I'll wrap it up with this, It is just that. It is signature, which means it's uniquely you. It's participation. It gives people an opportunity to do something in the cause. And it's a project, which means it's short term. It's a one-time shot. Doesn't mean they can't repeat it, but it's not sponsoring a child, and it's not coming and volunteering for the next 6 weeks, right? Let's talk about each of those things individually. So, signature participation project, it is signature. It looks, feels, smells, sounds like you. That's what we're talking about. Now, I understand that we're tempted to do a golf tournament, or we're tempted to do something like that because everybody thinks that you should do a golf tournament. Is that really uniquely you? I would say if you're a ministry to retired golfers, then it is probably very uniquely you, right? If you're not, probably need to think of something else, because that's not telling people your story. So what is it that's really uniquely you? What's something that only you can do? There's lots of ways that you can find inspiration for this. So if you're a ministry that you send crates of Bibles overseas, how could we equip people to send one? Right? And I understand that when it comes to this, it may not be the most expedient or cost-effective. It's not what I'm talking about. I'm talking about connecting people to a cause and giving them an experience so they're going to grow deeper. Okay? So is there a way that we could do that? We already talked about Project Angel Tree. If you work with foster families, how could we have people show up with a box of diapers, right? Those things that would resource foster families that would be really uniquely them. So how can we find things that are uniquely us? You might find inspiration from the region where you serve or the people where you serve, the music, the culture, what could be very uniquely you there? What about your group of champions? Is there something really unique about them and the demographic that comprises them? What about the experiences of the people that you serve? What's unique about them? Some organizations that provide clean water, I've seen some of the things that they do is they have people actually carry the big things of water a certain distance so that they can put themselves literally in the shoes of the people who are carrying water. So it's those types of things. What's uniquely you? So it's signature. The next thing that it is its participation. They have the opportunity to make actual change. This gives them their own part of the story to tell. So again, the shoebox at Christmas time, the Christmas gift in Project Angel Tree, those types of things where they actually get to do something in the cause. It's not just coming and hearing somebody talk, and it's not just writing a check. They get to actually do something. It's participation. And then the third element is it's a project, which means it's understandable maybe without connection to the whole cause. People understand when I'm filling a shoebox, there's a kid overseas who's going to get a Christmas gift. They get that, right? Or when I buy this Christmas gift, that child's going to get this. They understand they've made real change, and it's short term, it's low commitment. And I was teaching this one time, and I had somebody shoot up their hand really quick when I made that point. And they said, we're not looking for people with low commitment. We want people with big commitment. I said, you are right. I stand in agreement with you on that. But not yet. Where's the entry point? And where a lot of us make a mistake is we expect people to take too big of a commitment step at the beginning. Give them that smaller step and grow them in those commitment steps. That's what Signature Participation Project allows us to do. So again, yeah, question.
Yeah, as far as low commitment, if it's dollar amount involved, like with Samaritan's Purse box, there's usually like a dollar amount associated with filling that box. Mm-hmm. Is there a certain like range you would say under that is a low commitment, like $30 to fill a box, something like that?
It is a really great question. My answer to all questions like this always starts with, it depends, right? Because it depends on your cause. It depends on your ministry. It depends. The reason I would say that is because for a lot of people, a primary entry point into the cause for many causes, it's child sponsorship, right? Because that's the first step. And for a lot of organizations, that's way too big of a step. So I can't make that blanket statement of that, but what makes sense for you? What makes sense for your organization? Love to have a conversation with you about that. And I know that's something that Alan can continue the conversation on. So again, the answer, I wish I had a better answer, but the answer really is it depends on your cause and the things that you're doing. Yeah. Okay. But quite frankly, a lot of possibilities open up there. Okay. Great question. Right. So, signature participation project, uniquely you. People get to make real change, and it isn't something that they're locked into a long-term commitment. Another thing that's great about this is it can be easily repeatable. So as we conclude, I want to let you know about two resources that are available to you. The first one is at Mission Increase, we have a manual for events. And Tracy, do we have a copy of that? Great. Alan's holding it up there now. Okay. This is our events manual. Here's the deal. This is available for print on demand for Amazon, $25. Here's the thing. It's our 20th anniversary at Mission Increase. We're doing a whole big rewrite on this, which means I have an electronic copy that Alan would love to send to you for free. Okay? We like free. And at the front of your handout is Alan's email. To get that, you have to email him. Email Alan, and he would send that to you. We have it available. We want to resource ministry leaders with this manual. Okay? Large-scale events, cover to cover. It tells you a lot of stuff you need to know about doing large-scale events. The second resource, which again, Alan will send to you, you simply need to email him, is we have a resource kit for micro-events that will help you know how to coach your host, how to come up with some ideas of potential micro-events, how to nail down the details and debrief the experience. We've got a toolkit available for micro-events that we would love to resource you with. So those two resources want to give you, again, what you have to do, email Alan. He will be happy to resource you with those things. Thank you.
We will be asking again for what?
The banquet manual, or the events manual. So large-scale events. And the second thing is the micro-event toolkit. Or if you email him and say, Alan, those things that Kevin talked about, will you send those to me? He'll know what you're talking about. Send me the stuff that Kevin talked about. There you go. Okay? Thank you for allowing me to be here with you today. It has been my pleasure. I'll be available to answer some questions here for a few minutes until the next session starts. God bless you as you go, and I am looking forward to hearing about the inspiring events that you design. Thank you.